C3, Connecting Coaches Cognition, coaching with Courtney and Christensen. As a busy coach, you spend all day refueling, revamping, and reflecting with educators. Now is the time to stop and recharge your batteries with some much-needed coaching for the coach.
Welcome back to another episode of C3. I'm Courtney Groskin, and I'm here with
Violet Christensen.
Violet, we made it to May. What's new in your world?
Woo-woo. May is always a good day. I love the energy in education in May. It's just everything's a little electric. There's, you know, you're past that testing point. You're thinking and forward planning for next year. And it's just a fun time to be in schools. And I feel like when spring has sprung and the flowers are coming up, it's like the kids get that energy and electricity and the teachers get some of that because they can see the end. And it's just been fun to do some coaching sessions. But probably the thing that has filled my bucket, if you will, the most in the last couple weeks since we recorded last was I've had so many students find me. I have changed spots and districts multiple times. And the fact that my third graders are still finding me 8 years later or 10 years later or however many years. And I had a particular gentleman, his mom asked him, who do you want to send a graduation card to? And apparently I was the first name he said to his mom. And I am like, wow, you were in 12th grade. Like I taught third grade. There was a lot has happened since then. It should have been like his girlfriend or, you know, his best buddy from football or something. But instead he said, you know, Mrs. C. And so to me, that is so humbling. And it just always brings you back to your core of education. And I've had a lot of that from different sites and different locations of my fantastic third graders finding me. So I think that was the thing that has really just recharged my batteries and made me so excited to finish out this year strong.
Yeah, that it's a fun time of year for reflection and like thinking back. Everyone has that teacher with the core memory from elementary school. I have some from high school, and middle school is kind of a blur for me, but those people that just stand out. And through the power of social media now, everyone can kind of reconnect. I know I have a student singing opera in Detroit and getting to watch her journey and like the really cool things. And they're like real fledged adults now. It's kind of makes me feel really old.
It does. I had one send me a baby shower invite the other day and she was in my very first class. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So yeah, sometimes social media can be draining, but definitely being able to see my student who's in Japan and married traveling with her husband or being able to see this new baby being born. It's so cool to watch that when you get to that season in education. So it gives me energy. What's giving you energy right now, Courtney?
Just watching my new teachers make it to like the finish line, so to speak. I wrapped up my induction cohort the other night and we celebrated a little that everyone had met their requirements. And then, you know, we're headed into their second year of teaching. And it's just fun. I feel like May is a time of exploration. Like if you're thinking of trying something, now is the time to get into your classroom and do that. So that's really been my message, is just trying to encourage educators. Like if you think you might want to try this next year, let's give it a go now. I'm working with a teacher on creating some systems for her classroom and organizational structures. And I'm like, okay, what would it look like to implement this over the next few weeks? And if it doesn't work with this class, then well, no, it's not going to work with your class next year. Or if it works really well, then you have confidence going into your setup for next year.
100%. And how fun is that to just dream the next year in your, you know, finishing your first year of teaching? And just what a powerful reflection moment for sure.
Yeah, getting to start that new chapter with everything you know now, because you're just running so fast that first year, you're not quite sure what you don't know. And now they've got a pretty good idea of what it looks like.
That's fantastic.
Well, we have some groundbreaking guests with us today. I am kind of celebrity shocked, I'm going to say.
I feel like this is one that we put a pie in the sky when we were just baby podcasters back in the day and pre-COVID, which is crazy, and back in a little recording booth together. And we were like, someday we're going to get them. And now here we are. And so we would just like to take a moment to say thank you to all of our guests who have been here over the last 5 years, and we are ready to dive in with some fantastic guests today.
We are so excited to welcome Art Costa and Bob Garbson to C3. Art is an emeritus professor of education, California State University, Sacramento. He has served as a teacher, curriculum consultant, assistant superintendent for instruction, and director of educational programs for NASAA, He's a former president of ASCD and has devoted his career to improving education through self-directed learning and thought-filled instruction. Bob is an emeritus professor of education administration at California State University, Sacramento. He is the co-developer of cognitive coaching with Art Costa and co-developer of adaptive schools with Bruce Wellman. He has worked as an educational consultant and made presentations and conducted workshops for teachers, administrators, and staff developers in leadership, learning, and personal and organizational development in 24 countries on 5 continents. Welcome.
Welcome, gentlemen. We are so excited to have you here today on C3. And really, there would be no C3 without these two powerhouse guests today. Our listeners are so excited to hear and learn from you. But both Courtney and I were trained in the Thinking Collaborative and being able to learn cognitive coaching. It's something we rely on daily. And here we have the masters. So Art and Bob, can you please just start by telling our audience a little bit about who you are, if for some reason someone has been living under a rock in the coaching world and doesn't know you, and also just some of your background. You are a wealth of expertise, so we would love to hear a little bit more about your past.
Well, I'm Art Costa, and I have been working with Bob for about the past 40 years, and we met together at California State University in Sacramento, and he was assigned to my office. And we had one telephone that we had to share between three people, so we were passing back and forth this telephone as we were listening to people who were calling us. And one day, I kind of listened in and eavesdropped to Bob, and I said, you know, Bob, I hear you talking a lot about things that I'm very interested in, and he was too. And I said, I think we ought to have a talk together and see what's going on between us. So at the time, I had a boat, and we went out on our boat on Lake Folsom, and we docked on the side of the lake, and it was in that conversation that cognitive coaching was born. And we both came from backgrounds of people who we worked with who had great influence on our lives in terms of cognition. I worked with people like Reuven Feuerstein and J. Richard Sukman, as Bob did also. And so we were influenced by people who were cognitivists, you can call them that. And this also came at a time when we were undergoing a lot of teacher evaluation. And well, frankly, teachers were afraid of the process. They were being put down and evaluated and judged, and teachers were fearful. And so we wanted to make a coaching strategy that was trust building, where teachers could learn, and where we built teacher autonomy, instead of building on our own skills as a supervisor. That was the term we used in those days. And rather that the teacher had autonomy to think for themselves. So Bob and I collaborated, and that's how cognitive coaching was born. Bob might want to elaborate on that.
Well, my elaboration begins with a question, Art. In the image of you that I'm seeing, there appears to be a halo on your head.
That's my halo. That's right.
Okay. I just need to be clear about that. Excuse me. Background for Bob. 1958 was the year my first daughter was born. It was also the first year that I taught school, fifth grade, rural, 42 fifth graders in the class, trial by fire. I mention that as a starting point. I moved from being a teacher in that district to another one in Marin County, moved into a teaching principal role, was drafted to be a director of instruction in a neighboring district, and then traveled to Saudi Arabia, where I was part of a team that was composed for the purpose of individualizing instruction. And then after that, back to Sunnyvale principalship, and then a professorship with art. The part of my background is that I had a train wreck of a childhood. And because of that, in my 20s and 30s, I was seeking answers and healing everywhere. So I spent a lot of time with Carl Rogers, with Fritz Perls, with Abraham Maslow, and a number of other notables in the world of psychology. And I had hundreds of hours of exposure, often in encounter groups, sometimes one-on-one. And what that helped develop for me is a movement beyond my shyness, a movement beyond my self-reproach, a movement beyond having the pain of the childhood direct me. And so those are essentially the skills that I brought to bear as Art and I began working together.
I love that your relationship, you know, everything is built on that relationship piece. And that's such an important piece of cognitive coaching and such a important part of that coaching relationship. So it's nice to hear that that's how it started out for you. Just asking that question of like, we have these things in common. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. And then art, it's very, very important to note and recognize that art is probably the most generous person you have ever met. In the beginning, he had written an article for Ed Leadership called Supervision for Intelligent Teaching. He said, "Bob, take a look at this. What do you think?" I think I made one comment, and when it was sent in, it had both of our names on it. So there we go.
I have a friend like that who we get to write things together as well. And I love that it all started with a game of telephone and out on a boat. And I mean, I can just visualize that in my mind right now. And now we know why he has a halo, because he's the most generous person in the
world.
That's
right. Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you.
So if you can share with us what your definition of what a coach is. We ask this from a lot of our guests, and we find it's a great way to calibrate.
Be happy to do so. I'll make a couple of comments, and then Art can elaborate. The term coach is used in many, many, many different ways, most typically in athletic coaching. Coach, as we describe it, is a person who, alongside the person being coached, and this is language I got from Art, helps mediate between the person and the experience. What that means is that the coach helped the person being worked with pay close attention to the actual experience in all of its dimensions. And the experience includes their own thinking processes, what was going on, and results, et cetera. And so the coach is a mediator, like a medium in a highway. The coach's intention is to support self-directed, continuing learning for individuals that he works with. All right?
Well, I think there's a distinction between a coach, as Bob has said, and when we think of coaching, we often think about athletic coaches or health coaches or business coaches as a person who kind of stands off and helps other people get better at their craft. And that's true. But we draw a distinction with cognitive coaching. And what that means is that the coach intervenes, as Bob has said, in the thinking process of the teacher or whoever. And we find that teachers generally have a map inside their heads as to what they're going to do when they teach a class. In other words, they have a plan of action. They want some outcomes. They have a vision of their kids in their head. And a coach is one who it tends to illuminate that map and make it more explicit and make it more refined, and brings forth thought processes that perhaps the teacher has not thought about. And that occurs either prior to a lesson and again after the lesson is over. So we have a coaching session where the teacher and the coach sit together and plan a lesson. And during that process, the coach, as I said, illuminates that map that's inside the teacher's head and expands it and tries to check to see if there are any missing pieces and to ask questions to fill in the gaps where they are non-existent. And then again, after the lesson, it's very important that the teacher become reflective on the lesson and to learn from it so that they carry forth to new lessons what their learning is. That's that continuous growth cycle that teachers are in, and a coach then facilitates that continuous growth as teachers plan and reflect and plan and reflect and learn from their experiences. So it's like a spiral of ongoing learning that the coach engages the teacher in. And so when we say cognitive coaching, then we have to distinguish between what behavioral coaching is and what cognitive coaching is. Behavioral coaching is when the a coach will tell the teacher what to do differently. A coach might give praise for doing something correctly. A coach might admonish them to try some other ways. A coach might prescribe some alternative ways. But we feel very strongly that deep buried inside the teacher's experiences and knowledge and passions, that they have answers to their own questions. Coaches do not have to supply those answers, but rather they can probe and find the answers within themselves. And so one of the great goals of cognitive coaching is to build autonomy. And that is that the teacher, well, if I could put it another way, the coach tries to put himself or herself out of business because the teacher takes over their own coaching and becomes a self-coach, thinking about what the coach might have asked me, thinking about how the coach questions me, and I can ask myself those same questions. And so the coach really has the intention of turning over the responsibility of self-coaching to the teacher rather than building dependency upon the coach himself. We don't want to build dependency. We want to build autonomy. And that's uppermost in our minds as coaches.
I think another distinction between behavioral coaching and cognitive coaching is that cognitive coaching is a developmental process that keeps on going. That is to say, teachers will self-coach it themselves. After three or four coaching sessions, many teachers say, oh, I know what you're going to ask me. And they're asking themselves those questions. And behavioral coaching, while it has value in increasing skills and techniques, it is not developmental and self-actualizing in that way.
I love how you start with walking side by side, and it comes to that believing in that self-actualization of that they can pull it from themselves, and that if we have the power to coach ourselves out of their job, then we're doing something right. We talk about that all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one of our goals, is to build efficacy on the part of the teachers, that they are self-sufficient. But teachers are never completely self-sufficient. They're always looking for ideas, of course. But they're not dependent upon others to tell them what to do, but rather that they have their own innovations. They build on their own creativity. They know how to generate new and different ideas. And that's what we're looking for as an efficacious teacher.
I think a large distinction in our work is that we appreciate and focus on what we call states of mind. And we have developed understanding of these over the years. And the states of mind are consciousness, flexibility, interdependence, efficacy, And the other one that Art's going to name.
Craftsmanship.
Thank you. And we recognize that, for example, when a person does not know what to do in the moment, they often have past experiences that they can check out. And in examining those, identify things that are appropriate for what is happening now. We not only pay attention, but our goal is to help others develop those capacities. Because in essence, we all have flexibility, but some are more developed than others. The more flexibility a person has, the greater influence in any setting.
And those five states of mind are really bred within each human being. They are human drives to become more efficacious, to reach goals, to achieve, and to become more perfect. We're never satisfied with the result, but we always want something bigger, better, and more polished. We have a unique capacity for this consciousness, and building self-awareness is a large part of cognitive coaching. What are you aware of while you are teaching? What are you aware of that going on with kids while you are teaching? What are you aware of as you are reflecting on the coaching process? So much of what we do is metacognitive in that way, and helping us to become more conscious of our own thoughts and our own aspirations and our own goals, and to monitor those and refine them as they go on is a large part of cognitive coaching. And as Bob says, flexibility is a very large part of that too. We find that the most accomplished people are those who are flexible. They're not stuck in one way of doing things, but they have alternatives. They have options. They have creative ways of dealing with problems. So those five states of mind are, there are kind of our North Star that we guide ourselves by, and all human beings do, as a matter of fact. So we're tuning into what are very human aspects of growth and efficacy.
And I have a question for all of this. What I'm noticing is that you made the mistake of asking Professor Emeriti to answer questions. And what I'm hearing are very, very long explanations. And I'm wondering if you might like a briefer presentation so that you can cover more areas.
We are a passionate group of listeners, and I think every drop of knowledge that you can leave with us today, people are going to tune in and listen to, because this has been a long-awaited episode for us.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I think you guys have spoken so well to the key principles. You mentioned the five states of mind. You've mentioned a lot of nuances that I know are ingrained in the back of Courtney and I's brains from COG coaching training. But are there any other key principles or techniques or small takeaways that possibly one of our listeners might be able to take forward with them tomorrow that helps them to better understand the techniques behind cognitive coaching and how they differ or how they can best utilize those moving forward in their instructional coaching and cognitive coaching?
There are two that occur to me. The first is an assumption of positive intention. And we know that as we hold that, well, what we know is Carolyn McAndrew says, people act the best way they can at the moment. And we believe that to be true of humans, that we make our choices based on what's going on currently, internally, externally, etc., and that our intention is positive, towards positive ends. The other principle is the recognition that that communication is a vehicle for important messages. And we pay close attention to the total form of messages that we are receiving. We know, for example, that certain internal processes, physical processes, peptides, for example, in the bloodstream, will flow through the bloodstream. And as a result, we will see results in people's faces and bodies. And because of that, we can detect exactly when a person has come to an aha or a conclusion, or they have moved from distress to eustress. And that's a very, very powerful piece of knowledge. And it relates also, or is what is needed in it is a relationship of trust. And we know that establishing rapport, we know that paraphrasing, to deeply listen to another person, those things help establish that.
I'd like to point out something else. You asked earlier about what's in the future for cognitive coaching. And I must admit that we are undergoing some transformative stages. And what I mean by that is with new technology, with artificial intelligence, with greater demands on diversity in schools, we're having to do some reexamination of where cognitive coaching fits. For example, it's getting so now that, it was where teachers would be dependent upon a coach to make suggestions for teaching a lesson. Well, teachers don't do that anymore. They go to AI and you can get a whole host of lessons. And so the role of the coach then is being kind of taken over by AI, which is both a blessing and a two-edged sword, because, It may or may not build dependency on the part of the teacher, but it at the same time frees up the coach from being the giver of prescriptions. So it has its merits and it has its downfalls as well. Technology in the classroom is changing. For example, it used to be that Bob and I would go out and observe teachers both before, during, and after instruction. Well, you do all that on Zoom or video in the classroom by now, so that's not needed anymore. So we're having to rethink what does cognitive coaching look like for the 22nd century, and what are the changes that are going to be there? We don't want to lose the principles, but we can't deny that modern technology and changing school environments are creating some new demands, which is great. So we get more refined as we go along. So we are under study of how to respond to those changes and to create our focus on efficacy on the part of the teacher and building trust. And we never want to lose the human interaction, the human capacity to relate to one another. I think we've learned through COVID, what a loss that was when kids didn't have human beings to relate to, but only a machine, and that doesn't work too well. So that's another challenge to us, is how do we build upon the technology and yet still maintain trust and build that personal relationship that is so important.
Part of what is curious to us is to find more more knowledge of the metacognitive processes of teaching. As we do that, we know that we can sharpen our questions and our response patterns. We also know that there's a phenomena that humans experience in having outcomes that they're not aware of. Robert Kagan describes a situation in which people, heart patients, are advised to take medication. In a study that he was aware of, 47% of them did not take the medication, and they knew the result was they would die. That's crazy. And it is an outcome that the person has unconsciously. He was able to talk in depth with one such person. And what finally emerged is that the person said, I don't want to take the medication and wind up like my father, old and feeble and useless. Well, hear that, please. That is a very, very powerful, obviously, motivation. And when we talk about positive intentions, it embraces that because the person is trying to help themselves in that way. So those are a couple of areas that in addition to what Art said, that we're interested in.
I think there's also something to be said about some of the skills that we learn in cognitive coaching and how they relate to a bigger picture. And what I mean by that is that, for example, as you well know, we learn to be good listeners. And that depth of listening, to have another person listen to you and give you their full attention, and to not interrupt them, and to not agree or disagree with them, but just simply listen, to be there, is more than just listening. It's an expression of love. It's an expression of humanity, that we are with you as another human being as we go through this crazy world. So you're not alone. It is being curious, asking questions to show an interest in person. And so when you show an interest in a person, they become more whole. There's an old song, perhaps you remember Dean Martin singing, you're nobody till somebody loves you. You're nobody till somebody cares. And so in cognitive coaching, you realize that somebody cares, somebody loves you, and that makes you somebody. It's your humanity because you are being recognized for whom you are and what you are. And so we believe that cognitive coaching goes far beyond the schools, far beyond the coaching setting, and it's creating a better and more humane world. And that's what we are all about. That's what cognitive coaching is really about, is creating a more loving environment, a greater humanity. And we dedicate ourselves to that goal because that's what the world needs now.
And in relation to that, we are in the process of writing a book. And Art is 93, I'm 90. And from time to time, we look at each other and say, what the heck got us into this? particularly with the needing to have some kind of mastery or familiarity with all the technical stuff of communication. The book is deliberately aimed at identifying key principles and values of cognitive coaching and ways they apply in other settings. And with that, we've drafted or we've recruited chapters from other people. One is being called Coaching in the Clergy. We have a Catholic priest who is just amazing in his work that he's been doing in business management, in athletic. What else, sir?
business. Did we say that?
Yeah.
Yeah, business and athletics and coaching. Oh, and health sciences.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So we're hoping that, or rather our intention with this is to support people in different fields of being able to use some of these tools for the betterment of their own situation.
Yeah. We find that it's going well beyond education, where it first started, and is being applied elsewhere with great results.
I can only imagine it could be used in every realm. I sometimes am just driving home talking to my best friend. She goes, "You're doing that COG coaching thing to me again, aren't you?" Like, she can pick up on it.
Well, yeah,
like,
yeah.
In all realms of life, it's a powerful tool to be able to have. And I love that you bring it back to that sense of humanity and making the world a better place, because just as educators are always trying to make the world a better place, coaches are trying to make the world a better place. And I love that it comes to that root cause of investing in the human uniqueness and honoring that person in front of you.
That's yes, and we all are perfect in being able to do that. One incident that comes to mind is I was with my wife. She had opened a bed and breakfast inn, and she was talking to me about all the problems that she was having. Guess what I was doing? I was doing the mail. Well, here's an idea. Here's an idea. Here's an idea. Here's an idea. Finally, she said, "Bob, just listen to me." So it's we have to take effort sometimes to maintain the best intentions and best services.
Well, everyone just wants to be heard and seen, right? It's they need people to listen to them, and people are really good at saying, "I need advice here." But
yeah.
Other times they just want to be heard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I know we have a ton of coaches and aspiring coaches listening. What advice would you give to them about starting a journey in cognitive coaching? What advice would you offer them?
I think three things.
And
Art will name the first two.
I think my experience with cognitive coaching, with coaches who have been through cognitive coaching, is their transformation. Cognitive coaching is like a new illumination. It's a real mind shifter. You find yourself giving up old ways and adopting new and more powerful ways. And it builds a strength, and it builds a fortitude, and a commitment, and also looking for opportunities to coach others beyond the situation. You can even coach your spouses and your kids. So what I have seen over the years is how this transformation takes place is not as gradual. It doesn't happen overnight, but all of a sudden there's kind of an awakening. Say, "Oh, I never thought of doing it that way." And so it's building a new coherence to your life, and it really changes your outlook. You see that there's more than just advice giving or just listening, but also there is a deeper meaning that it brings to it, that you bring to it. And the relationship that happens to you is not only transformative of the coach and the coachee, but both people engage in that transformative process. And it's pretty remarkable, actually, to see how that's a transformation of your thinking.
I think another piece of advice, quote unquote, that we would offer for people that are beginning the journey of learning cognitive coaching, the advice that we would frame is patience. Patience with oneself, patience as the time it takes to develop certain of the skills, and there'll be individual differences. And along with the patience, to have collaboration on the journey so that you're sharing and learning from one another, from one another's experiences. Art, you're supposed to say, Bob, that was a good idea.
No, I agree. I think that's what learning both individually and with each other. There's something about learning, as Bob is saying, in a group that the group is learning to help each individual, and simultaneously each individual is learning to help the group. And that's what we mean by thinking interdependently, that both the group and the individual profit from each other's learnings and thinking. And so that needs to be shared, and it needs to be exposed, and it needs to be commented on and rejected. If you don't like it, that's all right too. But it's that interchange that is so important. And that's why interdependence, which is one of our states of mind, is so important, is because we don't learn individually. We always learn in relationship to a group. And that enhances both the group and enhances our own learning as well. So that's a very important piece for us, is to think interdependently. I agree.
Given the 40 years and the developments and the people that we have learned from along the way, the word is odd, but idolization occurs sometimes, particularly with art, that was me. And what we've learned fairly recently, a way to respond to that, because to be idolized is not helpful to the person being praised or the person praising, not helpful to the person being praised, because if they're responding to that, their outcomes move towards pleasing the person is praising. And what I become aware of very, very deeply is that, yes, thank you, I have knowledge and skills, but I am but a messenger. I am just a messenger, and I have been privileged to learn from just legions of extraordinary people.
Yeah. And that's another one of the attributes, I think, of a very skillful coach, in that there's a degree of humility that you reject the praise. You humble yourself before others. It's a servant leadership type of a role. So we believe that very strongly, that if the other person comes first, it's not the coach that's in the limelight, but rather it's the learner. And we all learn as a result of that process.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are blessed to learn from your interdependent wealth of knowledge. And I know that everyone who is listening right now has taken new notes or gained new insights to put in their repertoire for coaching moving into next year and finishing this year. And we are just blown away. So we will not praise you in this moment, but we will say that we're grateful to have you as part of our personal learning network now, and that we can be slightly interdependent with you as well. Because as Courtney and I were kind of thinking on the back end, we didn't even need to ask you questions. You coached each other right through that whole conversation, and we enjoyed every second.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We appreciate your engagement and interest in this area.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for giving us this opportunity.
We are just amazed, and we wanted to ask you one more question, if we can steal that moment. Is, can you tell us where we can learn more from and with you? Where can our followers find you? What else can we know that's coming down the pike?
The Thinking Collaborative is an outgrowth of this work. It's a organizing mechanism in which people are trained to coach, in which much of our work is spreading overseas, in which one can learn aspect of the coaching relationships, and encouragement. So that's a source. We could name also individuals, but I don't think that's appropriate. We are astounded by some of the people that we work with and their presence and their ability to be supportive of others.
Well, we want to thank you one more time. And as someone in education going on 18 years here, I have had a cognitive coach trained coach my entire career. And I don't think I would be the same person, the same mother, the same educator, the same coach without that. So a personal thank you to both of you from Courtney and I and all the people that you impact.
You are very, very welcome. Thank you.
We appreciate it.
It was such an honor to interview Art and Bob and hear how much the tenets of cognitive coaching are interweaved into our conversation. Whose thinking might you mediate today? Thanks for listening to another episode of C3. Be sure to follow us on social media. Thanks for listening.
C3, connecting coaches, cognition. Whose thinking will you mediate today?